Hello, everyone, and welcome to Film Feeder's feature presentation episode. I'm Jack Martin, your film chef extraordinaire, and I am very, very pleased to be joined today by a very, very special guest. She is a filmmaker, a journalist, an all-round awesome person. She is Billie Melissa Rogan. Hi, Billie, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I am very excited to have you on. It's been a while because we first met last year at the London Film Festival, didn't we?
I know, very typical festival way to meet of like just talking to the person in front of you in the queue.
Yeah, well, it's worked out so far. I mean, I made a good few friends along the way, and you're
I
one of them.
know. London Film Festival is such a joy. Like, I feel like everyone is just so lovely, and it's nice to meet you there.
Yeah, absolutely. And likewise, it's one of my favorite things about the festival is, meeting great like-minded people. So I'm really looking forward to doing it next festival, hopefully. I'm also accredited for BFI Flare, so hopefully I'll be speaking to a
Lovely.
few more people there too. But I'm
Amazing.
very excited to have you on because a few weeks ago you launched your short film on YouTube. I Love You Guys, and it's I believe last time looking it's gotten 4,000 views. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know how many it is now. I think I said to myself subconsciously when it got to 4,000, I was going to stop looking because then people start getting mean. I'm not looking at Letterboxd reviews anymore either. So yeah, I don't know. There might be more than that now. Last time I checked, it was 4,000.
Well, you were very kind to send me a little preview copy of the film before it went live on February the 14th. And I have to say, it's a remarkable piece of work. And it's for those who might not be familiar with the film, could you just give like a little brief overlay of what it is and what the overall themes are?
Yeah, so it's about a rising pop star called Sky. Her real name is Sarah. And it is kind of about the rise of her fame against the fall of her mental health and kind of our relationship to dreaming and how the closer we get to our dreams, actually, the more of a toll it takes on our mental health and our like relationships in our life. So it's actually become more meaningful to me. Now that it's out, we finished filming it July 2022, I think. So it's been with me for many years now. And like as I've kind of come to the end of it, when it's now people asking me like, oh, what's it about and all of that, I'm like kind of realizing it all over again. It's a really interesting experience.
Yeah, well, I have to say, the film tackles all that those anxieties surrounding fame and all the pressures of living up to it or living up to the public persona that people in the public eye put out for themselves. And it handles it so efficiently. You really feel the main character's struggles, just trying to grasp onto who she really is and having to put that aside in order for the public to accept her. And I think it's very well done. And I have and you said you filmed it in the July of 2022. So this has been in post-production for a while. And were there any challenges you felt you sort got along the way during like post, or what was it all like a matter of just getting it to the right rhythm?
I mean, it's actually taken much longer than that. So what happened was I got the script in April of 2019. We had a cast by November 2019. We crowdfunded in March 2020, and then obviously COVID hit and everything shut down and we couldn't get on set. And we never got on physical set until May 2021, which is when we did our first block of filming, which to spoil the movie magic, it's actually the hotel scenes. That we shot in May 2021. And then there was another lockdown. So we didn't get to film again until November of 2022. But I'd moved to New York. So I was directing it all over Zoom and like figuring it out that way. And so then we didn't film the final things, which were the concert scenes, until July 2022. So it was like a big kind of, or it was November 2021, then July 2022. So it was a big The whole film is just like a giant test of patience, but every single like obstacle that came our way was really like actually beneficial to the film. And I say that like not to say that like the pandemic was beneficial to us, but I mean like us being patient with making it was beneficial to us because it really made us sit and like think about every decision that we were making, and it allowed us to like dream for longer and be very intentional about every choice that we made. And in post-production, were there any? No, I feel like post-production was like the nice, easy process. I say that, and like my producer slash editor Lewis is probably listening, like, easy. I'm not sure about that. But for me, it was lovely to just like be like, change this, change that, change this. But no, it's been, I think like it's just been crazy seeing it all come together, especially because it's now been almost 5 years. So I don't know. It's like putting a child out into the world that you've been protecting and being like, go be free. I don't know. It's scary.
I mean, 5 years. I mean, that's like average length from like pre-production to completed for like a big feature length. And whereas obviously this was a short film, only 15 minutes, as I recall, and it took so long, obviously, for reasons beyond your control. And the fact that it comes together so well in the final edit, I think, is a real testament to not just you as a filmmaker, but also, the editors, the actors, the cinematographers. It's a very well crafted piece, and I think it's clear that there's a lot of passion put into it. And I just wanted to, really congratulate you on that. It's a real accomplishment.
Thank you. I have the best cast and crew and like everyone behind it. Like I'd been working on films for a while and I'd not had like the most on like the most pleasant on set experiences. And so like directing and kind of building my own set environment was really nerve-wracking to me because I'd only ever felt like I was doing everything wrong before. And so like stepping on set and being like, I have to tell people what to do and I'm really scared. I don't know, it was kind of like very healing for me, and everyone was just the nicest, like most generous, kind, like most talented person that could possibly be in that role. And I'm just so like so grateful that that was my first directing experience, was everyone just being the nicest and everyone just being like, yep, we can do that. And my cinematographer, I just want to like praise her over and over and over again for like listening to my rambling and like making everything look exactly what I wanted it to look. And I was saying words and I was like, this makes no sense. And then she was like, yep, got it. And like got the screenshot and was like, is this what you mean? And I was like, yes, how did you understand what I was saying? They're all just like magical unicorns. And our lead actress, Becky, she's amazing. And yeah, every single person, I love them so much and so grateful for their expertise. And being patient.
Oh, absolutely. And now it looks like you're doing it all over again. You've just recently opened crowdfunding for your next project, which is
Yeah,
exciting.
we'll see about that one. It's been a lot like of a different process because it's a smaller team. We don't know when we'll get on set is all I'll say, but we hope to, but we don't know when we will.
And where can good listeners go to if they want to support a filmmaker like you with this new project?
Oh, I mean, you can follow me on social media at Billy Melissa underscore. I usually am around there telling
Oh,
people what's going on.
that all sees away. And obviously, you can find links and stuff to everything that Billy is doing on her socials. And I Love You Guys, as a reminder, is out now on YouTube. Which channel can they find it on?
It is on Static Flow Productions YouTube channel.
Static Flow Production. So that's I Love You Guys. Check it out right now. And as much as I'd love to continue talking about your excellent little film, the real main topic at hand is a much more broader topic. Today we are talking about social injustice in film, and basically what this is we there's so many films out there that handle a lot of very difficult, I want to say, but that's probably not the right word, but like very diff I suppose difficult topics, And with the release of Ava DuVernay's new film, Origin, in UK cinemas via Black Bear on March the 8th, I felt this was probably a good time to kind of talk about these kinds of films, because obviously Origin, as a lot as with Ava DuVernay's wide variety of films, it really tackles a lot of important topics that I feel are relevant in modern society. And you've seen Origin, have you? And obviously I haven't as of recording this episode, but I do want to see it. But I mean, what first of all, what are your thoughts on Origin, and what do you feel it adds to the overall conversations that it's trying to bring up?
I really loved Origin. I didn't see it in the most ideal way. It was during awards season, so studio sending screeners and stuff, and I had it digitally, not physically, so I couldn't watch it on like a TV or anything. I had to watch it on my laptop in my bed, which was that's not the right way to watch this film, but it's still just as powerful, which is a testimony to her as a director. But it kind of takes the, I don't want to say genre because it's not a genre, but like the themes and topics, and completely flips it on its head because it's an adaptation of a non-fiction book by Isabel Wilkerson. And it does a very, very interesting way of adapting it because most people take the through line and like fictionalize it, and kind of similar to like Destin Daniel Cretton's Just Mercy. He took Bryan Stevenson's book and kind of like made the narrative from that. Whereas Ava DuVernay really leans into the like playing with it and kind of bringing the fiction and the nonfiction together and weaving, not necessarily documentary, but kind of like weaving her skill in documentary through this like fictional lens. And I think it's really revolutionary in what it's doing. I can't think of anything similar to it. I think it's very moving, very powerful. People should definitely see it. I know people always feel very not like that this is the movie that they want to pick. You know, movies are expensive. Most people want to go for an escape. Most people want to go to like, especially in the times that we're in right now, like politically, the last thing you want to do is like be reminded of everything politically. But it's kind of like telling you how these things formed and like kind of injustice throughout history in the last 100 years is connected. And I think she did an incredible job with it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I haven't seen the film, but it does look fascinating. And Ava DuVernay is a filmmaker who's certainly, you know, become known for very outspoken. I wouldn't say outspoken, that's probably not the right word either, but very topically relevant films. Obviously, she made Selma, and then she got an Oscar nomination for 13th, her documentary about the prison system. And it seems like Origin is a very much in keeping with more in 13th, more a bit more than Selma, because obviously it's looking at this historical kind of way in which, you know, a modern racism has been allowed to has yeah, sorry, start again, has been allowed to just kind of thrive in modern society. And it sounds very interesting, and you really kind of sounds like you really got a lot of that from how DuVernay tells this story. Like you said, blending her non-fiction writing with Isabel Wilkerson's actual life. So I mean, it sounds very interesting to say the least. Was there anything else about the film that really stuck out for you?
I mean, it really is just like a giant experiment, I guess, in the sense of like it's pushing audiences to expect more from their media and expect more from stories like this, because we have become wildly complacent. And I always kind of have a bone to pick with people when they write about films like this and they call them vital. And they're like, this film is vital. And they've been saying that about Ava DuVernay's work for years. And it's like, yes, that's true. But what are you doing as an audience member to change the narrative? Like, what are you doing to educate yourself to make sure that you're not perpetuating these systems? And I think that her work is never like accusatory. It's never like telling anyone that they're wrong. It's never telling anybody that they're bad people for this way. Like, she's just like inviting you to be part of the conversation, in a way that is like open and is like holding your hand and giving you someone to root for and giving you someone to identify with. Like in this film, it is Anjali's character. And I don't know. I really love her work for just having a real sense of like compassion and humanness at the center of it. Because a lot of these films can become trauma porn or are trying to like, I don't know, like aestheticize violence. And that is something that she never ever leans into that I think like a lot of audiences really appreciate because. It's dangerous to constantly be exposed to violence and constantly be exposed to these things, and then it just becomes normal and you feel hopeless and you feel like there's nothing you can do. Whereas, like, she is helping you understand the system so that you can be educated and you can communicate why you feel a certain way about a topic because she is giving you the tools to be able to do that. So I think she is doing too much of the work, honestly. Like, there should be more filmmakers like her so that she has this like weight taken off of her of having to tell these stories or being expected to tell these stories. And like, of course, she probably chooses her projects and she can make what she wants. But like, to a certain extent, as all female filmmakers are, like, we're expected to tell specific kinds of stories. And I just hope that she doesn't feel like she's the only one that can. Like, or has to tell these stories, or like feels a weight to be the one to bring this to light. Because it's a lot, it's a burden to carry sometimes to be the one who has to consistently educate people in a certain sphere.
Absolutely. I mean, luckily, there are plenty of filmmakers out there who do kind of take these topics and really turn them into, not just entertainment for like audiences and the big screen, but really kind of drive home some very powerful themes and message. I mean, you brought up Just Mercy recently, and that's a film that very much is just all about just focusing on this real life case where it is a guy played by Jamie Foxx in the film. He's on death row, and along comes lawyer Michael B. Jordan to really kind of plead his case and really try and get to the crux of it. And I think you've said in the past, you've been very affected by that film in particular, Destin Daniel Cretton's film. And obviously, because it deals with such themes as like the death penalty and all sorts of racial injustice. I mean, what is it about this film that really kind of, what does it mean to you, and how does it kind of how has it shaped kind of your other work and other projects?
Well, I saw it for the first time at London Film Festival, actually. It was a late addition to the program. It wasn't on the program. That and Waves got added last minute because they had such success at TIFF that like last minute they added those two films and no one really knew what they were about, but like because they were coming from TIFF and they had Michael B. Jordan, Jamie Foxx, and then in the other one they had a great cast as well. We just went into it and was just like, okay, I had no idea. I didn't know what it was about. I had no, like, I didn't know the synopsis or anything. I knew the title. I showed up. And then I was just so profoundly moved. I was in a row of people with friends, and all of us were just complete and utter messes. Like, we were there until the end of the credits, like crying. The security guard had to ask us to leave because he was like, we've got another screening. Like, you can't just stand here and cry. I'm really sorry, you need to leave. But it deeply impacted all of us because for me specifically, I didn't know. I didn't know the death penalty still existed. I thought it was something that had happened like hundreds of years ago and we'd moved on from it. And I had no idea this. And I felt so ignorant and silly for not realizing that that was something that still happened in the world. And immediately I left the cinema. And as you do, like you post your social media reactions. And there's a man in the film called David Lee Garlock. And he appears. Just before Michael B. Jordan meets Jamie Foxx for the first time, he's talking to like four different men. And one of the men is called David Lee Garlock. And all four of those men are actual real life clients of Bryan Stevenson. So they came into the film and they spoke to camera for like 20 minutes, giving like a rundown of their real life story. So their real life stories are in the film. And David told me his story. He shared his story with me. And you can find his story online if you just search his name. And I was profoundly moved by that. Like someone, that was the first person who had come into my life that I had known that had been impacted by the system. Like I'd never known anyone who had been in prison. And it really normalized and humanized something that is so inhumane. Like it's something that media and the government does a really good job of making us feel like these people were monsters or psychopaths or like all of these buzzwords. And he taught me about like the importance of language and how like formerly incarcerated people like to be called returning citizens. They're people who are returning to society. And he taught me so much. And then from there, like my work kind of stemmed out further into advocacy work and connecting with other families and people who are telling me their stories. And so Destin Daniel Cretton's film is a really good example of how movies really do change hearts and minds and change lives. Like they really do change people. And maybe I was, I'm more susceptible to change than other people because I already had views that would align with that. But I really believe in the power of film to change these narratives.
Absolutely. And I think one of the main points to take away for today is that all the films that we talk about, whether it's Just Mercy or Origin or some of the other ones later on in the show, all of them, they're made by filmmakers, obviously with an intent to spread a message, but it's the way that they impart them that it makes it leave them such a big impact on people's lives. Obviously, Just Mercy had that effect with you, and there are plenty of other films that have effects on other people. But it really does go to show the power of film, like you say, and how just watching something re can really just kind of move you, and maybe you see something on screen that you never thought you'd see in yourself or other people. But it's just it's such a powerful feeling when filmmakers really kind of get to that core of what people can feel as a whole. And example of this recently, I saw The Old Oak, which is the recent Ken Loach film, very good by the way. And I was at the BFI South Bank screening with there was a Q&A with Ken Loach and some of the cast and crew afterwards. And during the film, I mean, I don't know if you've seen The Old Oak yet, but there's a scene. Well, for those who haven't, there's a scene about in the middle of the film where the main character, he goes into a very emotional monologue about how at one point he attempted suicide. Which again is a very it's a very difficult subject to talk about in any way, and that really that got to me personally because sorry, getting real for a moment. I did this was during the pandemic. I had recently just gotten laid off from my job, and I was that on top of everything else in 2020 was really gangs me, and that was a point in my life when I did make an attempt on my life. I know it's pretty heavy to bring that up, but I wanted to because I want to make the point that seeing that portrayed so effectively in films like that, as it did for you in other films like Just Mercy. It really can make you feel seen. It can make you feel like you're not going through this sort of stuff alone. There are people out there who can listen and who can really just kind of empathize or sympathize with whatever you may be going through and do whatever they can to spread awareness that at the end of the day, you're not suffering in this alone. So obviously, it's not as I don't know, it's not, obviously it's not as important a topic as say like wrongful imprisonment or any of the other stuff we'll talk about today, but I wanted to bring that up, not to earn any sympathy points. I'm not like reeling in compliments or anything like that, but I did want to share that because I just wanted to say that it's very important to have films like Just Mercy, just like The Old Oak, just to really kind of just no, oh no, sorry, I'm just checking out because it's difficult for me to talk about, but it's yeah, it's just kind of easy, did not easy. It's difficult to really kind of see unless it's shown on the screen. So that's that. That's all I want to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, just to go on from that, like, it's so, I don't know, I think filmmakers underestimate sometimes, and that's why I'm very like with films, I'm like, there's a responsibility, like as a filmmaker, like you have an audience and people are going to respond to that. And so like with Ken Loach and The Old Oak, like he was speaking to the way that like society can place that much pressure on someone that they feel like that is their only option. And it seems like something that is like small or like insignificant in the moment, but so many people deal with it, especially across the UK, and especially men as well. Like, you know, those topics aren't always like in like the male perspective. So it's important to like remind men as well that, you know, you're open to talk about these subjects and you should be able to talk about these subjects. And I think that what he did with that scene was really deeply moving. And I mean, all of his work throughout history is the most beautiful like depiction of humanity. And it's so sad if that is his last film, like if that's the last message that we get, like what a beautiful film, but like so sad that, you know, these types of stories don't really get funded anymore. And it's, yeah, I don't know. I think it's really like important to talk about those things too. Like you say they aren't as important as wrongful conviction, but they are like in their own category. They are equally important. Like it's still your life and it still is very important. And other people will feel that way too.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I appreciate that. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, I mean, obviously, there's things like that, and there's also, you know, plenty of other topics that are covered in all sorts of. I think a popular top. I wouldn't say popular, but like I guess like a common subject that is brought up in a lot of films, especially lately, is you know. The topic of racism itself, you know, that includes like police brutality and systemic racism. I mean, even in when quote unquote positive portrayals as seen recently in American fiction, you know, like there's a sort of stigma as to being like only being able to tell black stories if you're a black creator. And yeah, I think especially nowadays when there are such horrifying stories of, you know, people being persecuted and isolated just for their religion or color of their skin and so forth. I mean, it's a very difficult subject, and filmmakers again like Ava DuVernay really kind of bring that to light. But I mean, how do you feel about like filmmakers that take this very very important subject and just kind of like you say, not turn it into trauma porn or anything that's too overly sentimental?
I think it's all about having the person whose story it is tell the story. Or the person who's adjacent to the issue, like, should be the one telling the story. And, you know, I think that, like, as a female filmmaker, I feel that about female stories or inherently female or female-led stories. I always find they just work better written and directed by women. You know, I have no authority to say how, like, black people or people of color should feel about the way they're portrayed. You know, I'm a white woman, I have no say in that. But from my perspective as a woman, like watching stories that are written and told by women, and it's just like what you said about American fiction as well, like is written and directed by a black man, so he has the right to tell that story in that way, and it feels so authentic and genuine and people connecting with it because it's his story and he gets to share that. And I know it's adapted from a book, I believe.
Yeah,
So it's, you know.
Erasure, I believe. Percival, I can't remember the author's name. I'm so sorry,
Yeah, well,
but the
even so.
but the novel is named Erasure.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that it's just an example of showing the person honestly. And I work with people who have loved ones on death row to tell their stories through media. And my whole thing is like, if you know, it has to be through that person's lens, it has to be the person on death row themselves telling their story, because I don't have the right to define what their experience is. And so if they're watching something that I made and they're not happy with it, then they get to change it and they get to say this doesn't work, it's more like this, because they don't have the means and the tools to be able to deliver the story themselves. Like they need someone to be able to like help them along the way with that. And I think that filmmakers specifically, we've seen it even recently. I don't want to call out May December, but I heard that there was like an issue with the person whose like story it was adjacent to wasn't very happy and wasn't informed and felt uncomfortable. And like that's really important to be asking people's permission to represent them and always be, you'll always make a better film for being guided by the people whose story it is. Like you're never ever going to make the best version of your film possible. You know, everyone loves May December. I don't really know like how the like two stories really combine. Like I only saw briefly like the commentary of it online, but I'm just saying like from my experience watching films, I always notice when someone who is like when something feels authentic and genuine and not just like someone's ideal version of that situation. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah, no, I do. In fact, I saw a story today as a recording that the filmmakers behind the film The Lost King, directed by Stephen Frears, and it was co-written by Steve Coogan. They are, yeah, they're getting they've got a lawsuit coming from one of the people who are depicted in the film, because in the film they're depicted as being quite weaselly and villainous, and obviously that's considered libel. So now this
Oh
person,
dear.
real life person, is taking them to court. So yeah, I think that's true in that you're right. It is important to get like as much of a an idea of every kind of perspective that it went into the real events. Otherwise, you know, you get cases like that, and then it's a very black and white situation.
Yeah, it's scary, especially because the industry is still skewed towards the white cis male. It's, you know, we still, those are still the dominant stories at the box office. And I'm not like, I've seen lovely depictions of women from men, like 20th Century Women, directed by Mike Mills, written and directed by Mike Mills, I think is a very genuine, authentic experience. But it's about like knowing when to talk and knowing when to listen. And I think that a lot of people actually don't have that skill, even though they think they do. It's difficult. Like you have to be open to, you have to really genuinely love people and love telling stories and love hearing stories. That's wild about The Lost King. Did not know that. Gonna have to look that up.
Yeah, and then I think it was only a day ago or so that the news came out. Apparently, women held only 35% of speaking roles in films last year, according to a recent study, which is insane. I mean, especially in a year that gave us Barbie, you know, which is one of the best films of last year, and certainly the most popular at the box office. So yeah, obviously there's a long way to go in terms of just making sure that, you know, everyone has their say in film, which is very sad to me.
Oh yeah, we're not even a fraction on this. I mean, we see it every year. Like, if we define the Oscars as the picture of Hollywood that year, like we see it every single year with the director category. It's always the director category. Will there ever be an all-female director category in my lifetime? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that I believe that that will happen. Sad though.
It'd be pretty cool
I
though.
know we've got two one year. We got
Yeah,
two.
we got to. I mean, we got Justine Triet is up this year, but yeah,
I know, but
obviously.
one's not enough.
I
One's not
know,
enough.
I know, I know. I wanted Greta Gerwig in there too.
Not just her, Celine Song, Sofia
Yeah.
Coppola. Like, there were so many women who made great movies. Sad. It's scary.
It really is. So yeah, there's plenty of discussion surrounding, you know, just general parts for women in the film industry as a whole. Obviously, the recent Oscar nominations reflect that, for better or worse. But there is also, you know, the conversation, to get take it back briefly to discussions on the death penalty, always a cheery topic. There's, I mean, you obviously mentioned that you're working on a number of projects about that subject. So, do you want to like talk a bit, a little bit about that, about a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, most recently, I've worked with families a lot over the last 4 years, four, almost five years this year. It's like end of 2019 when I started beginning doing that. And there's always different needs depending on where the case is at. But a specific person I'm working with right now, his name is Billy Allen. He's on federal death row with a case of innocence. And in July of 2022, I traveled to St. Louis, Missouri, to speak with his family, his childhood friends, his teachers from elementary school. And we made a documentary about his story that we just finished, completed post-production, sound design, everything. Everything's done. We actually have a discussion after this podcast about distribution and stuff, so I have no idea when people will be able to see it. But his case is really urgent because President Biden, who knows if he's going to get a second term, and his opposing candidate right now is Donald Trump. And should Donald Trump come back into power, then 110% Billy Allen will be executed. Because Trump executed 13 people at the end of his presidency, and he has the intention to do the entirety of the death row. So, and he will with another 4-year term. So it's all very urgent. But that's the main project that I've kind of been working on right now. It's like a 23-minute documentary. And yeah, hopefully it will help his fight to come home. He's been working, he and his family have been working for almost 3 decades at this point. So I'm just, anything I can do to help. He's a great person, like the nicest, like most generous, compassionate person. Considering his circumstances, you think he'd be the most jaded, cynical, but he's just not. He's just a nice, I don't know anyone who's more generous than he is.
He sounds like a real stand-up guy. I really, really do wish him all the best. I hope he gets his day in court, figuratively and literally. But yeah, I mean, it's because you also recently because you write for Men's Journal, and you recently published a news article about Richard Linklater's new film about that very. About that very subject, not the actual death row inmate himself, but just the concept of the death penalty in and of itself. So, how was writing about that? How was finding about another filmmaker's perspective on all that?
It was really, I don't want to say encouraging because it sounds incorrect, but it was encouraging to have a conversation with him. I spoke with him on Tuesday night. It was the night before Ivan Cantu was executed in Texas. And he was just so so genuinely concerned. And I've spoken with celebrities before, and it is very obvious that their interest is adjacent to their success and their step up in the industry, and it's a very weird relationship. But his is so genuine and authentic because he grew up in Huntsville, Texas, which is where Texas's death row is. And it's like this giant prison in the middle of the city, and there's like this restaurant, like cafe diner next to it, which has the weirdest menu. That's like you can buy the Warden Burger or the Old Sparky Burger, or the just like all of these horrible prison named foods. Like it's like a show, like it's part of it's part of culture in Huntsville. And so the
It's giving zone of interest vibes.
horrifying, like horrifying, like genuinely, like completely, it's like walls, you can't see over it, you can't see into it. And me and Richard Linklater actually spoke about this. We spoke about the secrecy of the death penalty and how that allows it to thrive. And he made this wonderful documentary called God Save Texas, Hometown Prison. There's 3 episodes. His is the first in the three, and it's on HBO if you're in the US. I don't know when it will be available here in the UK. But it's this wonderful, all angles, conversation of the death penalty, of the people who are incarcerated there, the people who work at the prison, the people who have to commit the executions, every single person is included in this conversation. And it's about how infected it is in this society, and how it's not their fault. It's not these people's fault, it's the government's fault for enabling the system to be what it is. And yeah, speaking to him and hearing his genuine concern and genuine involvement in the issue was encouraging because there are a lot of people who come here to find their fame, which is the most bizarre way to find fame, in my opinion. But there is a lot of insincerity. And so to hear him so sincerely concerned was very like moving to me. And I don't know if he took interviews because it was the night before an execution and he wanted to raise awareness about it, but I'd asked for the interview like a month prior and I didn't hear back until like a month later. And so I wonder if it was supposed to be in, raising awareness of Ivan's case, which if that was the case, then that shows how genuine of a person he was. And I didn't know it was an issue that he was so deeply ingrained in, but it is.
Yeah, I mean, Richard Linklater strikes me as a guy who really does care about whenever he does films about real life subjects. He tends to really put his heart and soul into it. I mean, he puts his heart and soul into everything. But I mean, when it's about real life people, like I think there was a story like when he made Bernie with Jack Black, the guy, the actual man that he was playing, Bernie, I can't remember what his name was, but the actual Bernie himself. When he got paroled, Richard Linklater actually gave him a place to stay at his own house, which is kind of awesome when you really break it down. Because here's a guy who's been convicted of murder, and this guy, if you've ever seen Bernie, this guy was apparently so popular that and it shows us in the film too. Even when he is arrested, they're being like, well, the victim was kind of terrible anyway. So they're really loving this guy. And obviously Bernie's such a this Bernie in real life seems like such a lovable figure that the main guy who made a film about his life and crimes actually offered him to stay a place to stay afterwards, which is pretty cool of him, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, in the film, In God Save Texas, he talks about his mother's kind of involvement with returning citizens and like helping them get back on their feet when they came out of prison. So I think it's very much something that he's grew up around. I had like an entirely newfound respect for him, like learning all of this about him and his history. Haven't seen that film though, so I'll have to definitely check it out.
Yeah, but Bernie's a good one. That's a very underrated one. I mean, Jack Black's great in it. I think it's Shirley
Jack Black's
MacLaine.
great in everything. He's
Oh,
wonderful.
absolutely. And Shirley MacLaine's in it, Matthew McConaughey, because of course.
Okay.
Yeah, well, honestly, and on the subject of Linklater, I'm so glad he's bringing out something like Hitman, but just to counteract all the oh my God, it's so good.
So good.
I can't wait for that film to come out nearer the time so I can properly talk to someone about it, because my God, that was my favorite film of last year's festival. My God, that
It
was.
was such a joy, such a great screenplay. Yeah, I would have spoken to him about it, but the kind of conversation we were having, there was like no room for that. But it's amazing.
It would have been awkward, just like, oh yeah, talking about death penalty and stuff. So anyway, Hitman.
Yeah, it was a really like somber tone of a conversation that I like genuinely like all went out of my mind. But Hitman is so good,
Oh
so,
my
so
God.
good.
Oh, June can't come soon enough. I swear to God.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's going to Netflix kind of breaks my heart a little bit, because
Oh,
yeah,
it deserves that, like that London Film Festival screening.
it deserves to have its own theatrical run. It really does. I wish
Surely it
Netflix
will
would.
get a small one.
Yeah, but it's not enough for
It's not
something
the
like
same.
Hitman. It's not enough. No,
Yeah.
it's a crowd pleaser that crowds just won't be able to see, which makes me sad. Anyway, that's by the by. But yeah, I mean, in terms of going back to what we were talking about earlier, there's obviously a lot of other films, that deal with kind of very topical subjects, like The Hate U Give, Fruitvale Station, Detroit, Loving. All of them deal with some kind of brutal historic racism in some way. And again, you have filmmakers like Ryan Coogler, you have Kathryn Bigelow and Jeff Nichols, all really kind of putting their heart and soul into very important stories. Like, I mean, Detroit was an absolute experience, to say the least, and just in how brutally it shows just the absolute sorry, I can't really think. Sorry, I can't think right now. Brain fart. How it shows the absolute brutality of the people who are supposed to law and serve and protect, but they just kind of abused that power and inflicted it upon your civilians who happen to be of color, and seeing that stuff in film is horrifying. And you're right, it's not exactly a fun movie to watch, but filmmakers like those, they really kind of get to the heart and soul of it without it really feeling exploitive. And yeah, as a filmmaker yourself, I mean, do you feel that kind of responsibility in showing these very real historical events that happen to real people? And do you agree that there's a sense of, we have to get this story right, otherwise, what's the point of making it?
Yeah, 110%. I with this documentary, I felt immense amount of pressure. I was like, when I filmed it, I was 26 years old, I think 26, 25. I'm a young, random white girl from the UK who moved to America and like is coming over and coming into your space and like asking you to tell me about like the most traumatic thing that's happened to you. Like, what's my right? But the only reason I did it was because Billy Allen asked me to. And that's my thing with that kind of work is I don't insert myself into somebody's life if they ask me to help. And I do have people reach out and ask for help specifically, then I will, because it's none of my business. Like, it's none of my business to be dragging up people's trauma and to be making them talk about things they don't want to talk about. And yeah, with our film that we made about Billy Allen, it's really guided through him, and like we speak on the phone regularly, we email all the time, and I'm friends with his sister, and it's about becoming making it personal, because that's when these issues really start to be able to be spoken about in a way that hasn't been done before. If you just come in and you're just making the movie and you just do what you want and then you leave, like you've made something that is impersonal and something that isn't, at all representative of the actual issue. So for me specifically, like I always want to be very, very mindful of my like privilege as a white woman. And I don't ever want to be like, this is the definitive version of this, because it's not like it doesn't like who cares what my lens on it is? Like, nobody cares. Like, if it's not in true collaboration with the people whose story it is, then what's exactly what you said? Like, what's the point?
Yeah, no, I think you really for these films that we've mentioned, films that tackle such via such hard-hitting topics, like you really want that kind of level of authenticity, otherwise, it's just kind of it devolves into like a kind of like white savior narrative that is been criticized time and time again, but that didn't stop Hollywood from giving Green Book Best Picture. But I don't know, it's a very tricky thing, because if you are coming at it from a certain angle, then yeah, it's going to be seem really cynical and, like you said, insincere. Whereas but then again, I think that it's a bit of a double-edged sword, I feel, because if we only feel that it's people who have kind of like similar experiences, like if a black filmmaker was making a film about racism in the police force or something, then there's that kind of I feel that kind of accentuates the point that American fiction is trying to make, that black creatives are being pigeonholed into telling stories of this caliber, whereas obviously there's so much more stories to tell where, the only black thing about them, as they say in the film, is the ink. So I don't know what point I'm trying to get at here, but like I think it's more just like I think we've got to, I mean, I think you're absolutely right in saying that, certain people, should be able to tell certain stories, because if I was to make a story about, the shooting of Trayvon Martin, it would just be absolutely heinous, because one, I'm a terrible filmmaker, and two, I don't have that kind of I can't bring that level of authenticity to the work. But as as yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of a tricky situation, and I feel that I'm not sure what the right answer is. I feel like I'm
Yeah.
mumbling.
Well, it's like allowing the right people to tell these stories, but not expecting it to be the only story that they tell. Like, it's not like about just giving someone funding to do the same thing over and over again. It's like when they bring you an alternative idea that isn't anything to do with injustice or like even being a woman, like I feel in the industry sometimes filmmaker like or certain like funding opportunity, like they want a specific lens of being a woman, and it's like the things that you don't really care to talk about because you're not trying to bring up like these issues over and over again, like not trying to exploit your own trauma on repeat. Like you should be able to tell like these multifaceted stories. And I think that a lot of like what Hollywood does is allows Black filmmakers to tell the same story over and over again, but they won't give the money to do anything else. And it's similar like in the film criticism world of like asking Black journalists to cover films by Black filmmakers, but then not giving them any coverage on like Dune or like I don't know, like a Marvel film or something that isn't anything to do with being traumatized. And you know, I think it's about acknowledging that humans are more than just these like things that are depicted on screen. Like we have other interests that aren't just, you know, and speaking from a female filmmaker standpoint, like I feel like nobody wants me to make a romance movie because they're like, no, like we don't want to see women falling in love. It's like I do. I want to see women falling in love from women's perspectives because then we get past lives like Celine Song made. And you know, that was a complete revelation of a film because like these stories do exist, but not in the way that like women want to tell them. And I just think, you know, it must be the same for other people who feel underrepresented in the industry. They want more opportunities to tell stories beyond what is expected of them.
Yeah, no, and I think there's also I feel there's also a danger of, you know, when they are when they are given that platform, you know, they can either, downplay it as they should, because like I said, not every like you said, not every female-led or black-led film should be about some kind of trauma or specific issues. There's also, you know, there are cases where, you know, they can really lean hard into it in ways it can feel very sorry, grasping the word here. It can feel very overdone, like it can feel very forced. Like an example that comes to mind is the I don't know if you saw this, the 2019 Black Christmas remake.
I did not see that.
It's not a good film, I don't feel, because you know it's a film that they're really kind of has this kind of very angry and kind of mean-spirited in a way kind of look at modern gender politics, and it does it in a way where it's very it's not subtle, which I understand, you know, films like that shouldn't really be subtle, otherwise the point wouldn't be gone across. But it does what it does so in a way where it's not so much a film, it's more like a set of buzzwords, you know, like it's a sense of like I'm saying this because it'll get me points on Twitter, you know, like I don't know. Again, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I feel like there are times when it can feel unfortunately forced, and that kind of affects people's perceptions of feels like the films like that as a whole. Like, I remember when Spike Lee made Bamboozle, which is a very uncomfortable movie to watch.
I've not seen that either.
Yeah, I mean that's a film where it's kind of like takes the network approach, but it's just about like I think it's about like people who green like a modern black minstrel show, and it's just every bit as uncomfortable as you would imagine. But I mean, it's stuff like that where you know it's not subtle at all, and you know the point is very much apparent, and it's very it's very it doesn't leave you in a comfortable place, as films like that shouldn't do. I mean, Spike Lee's a very provocative filmmaker. But what I'm getting at is that there are times when you know they do films do kind of have these messages, but they kind of go about it in a forceful way that kind of have the opposite effect of what they're trying to achieve, which is it can create a very muddied perception of things. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the context of either one of those films, but I am also like, sometimes you just gotta let people make what they need to make, you know? Sometimes that is their catharsis. Again, like I don't know anything about the two films that you mentioned, but
course.
for me, if a film isn't harming me or my way of life or my like viewpoints, I just don't, it's none of my business. I don't have to have an opinion on every single film. I'm not a film critic, she says, as a paid film journalist.
No,
It's quite
no, I'm
literally my job, but
yeah, I apologize. I apologize. But no, I don't know. I think these are just weird random thoughts I have sometimes. But it's but by and large, I think it is important that, we do still get films made by, bright filmmakers who do have the talent and the passion to really say stuff about the ways of the world, while also still making it a film in and of itself, I think is what I'm getting at. Like, again, I point to Barbie as a great example of that, because I mean, not only what Greta Gerwig did with that film and talking about all sorts of things, like from the patriarchy to just feelings of womanhood. I mean, America Ferrera's monologue in and of itself should speak wonders for that. But the fact that she said all of these things and still made it a really, really entertaining film that is funny, it's smart, it's endearing, and it's obviously been such a huge hit with audiences and critics alike that, it makes me wonder, why more filmmakers, especially in that blockbuster mode, aren't allowed to make films with such powerful messages anymore. It's all just about like big what the biggest budget can be. And sometimes a film doesn't need that. A film just needs to be well written and well made, well acted, and just tell a good story like Barbie does.
yeah, I think it's a lot to do with the voices they let into the spaces and the people they will afford the good fortune to take those risks. I love Greta Gerwig and Jordan Peele and Damien Chazelle for like making the third films that they did, like Nope, Babylon, and well, I guess Babylon isn't really his third film, but like, getting the big budget and then making like the wildest possible thing you could do, like Babylon, Barbie, Nope. I'm trying to think of another example. I don't know, but like really taking that money and taking a risk and like making something that is bold, and whether it pays off or not, like Barbie did financially. I don't know what the Babylon box office ended up being.
I don't think it did particularly well at the box office. I mean, like, because I think I'm on the same boat with Babylon. Like, I thought that movie was really, really good. It was ambitious. It was wild as
I
hell.
loved it. It was my
It's
favorite
great.
film of that year.
It's great. I actually do have a big fondness. I like how Damien Chazelle just took a big swing and just like, you know what? I'm just gonna do my own thing. It's not gonna please everyone, but screw it.
Well, exactly. That's to your point of the last of comment of being like, why doesn't Hollywood fund these things? Is because they don't want to take a risk on the people who will tell these stories, and like it's only new voices really that want to tell those stories because we're only just like becoming conscious of it as a society. I don't know what the origin budget was. I'd be interested to see what Ava DuVernay got to make that, but
I believe I saw somewhere, I think it was about 30 million, and then
it's not enough.
I know
It's not enough.
I think it's only made like 4 million. So obviously, box office wise, I don't think it's done particularly well. But like you said, people don't really go to the cinema to get these sort of like big important like I don't want to say lectures because I feel like I'm knocking it, but like these big important like 2.5 hour films about modern racism. They just want to see with Timothy Chalamet dancing in Wonka. Like they want to they just want to be entertained. And it's
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, it's good to be entertained and all, but your brain needs some entertainment as well. And you really, the p films have, I feel, have the power to really make you think about things you never even would have thought of going in. And I know we haven't really talked much about, a lot of films, and it's really just been more of a back and forth and, talking about your experiences and your reactions to certain films as well. But one of the reasons why I wanted to do this particular episode and have you on it was because, I know that there is a real drive and passion in audiences lately to to be challenged. You know, like people don't want stuff like The Flash or Quantumania or, you know, big effects driven stuff. I mean, some of that stuff can be a lot of fun. Some of it can be even be great, but at the end of the day, people want to actually come out of it feeling, you know what, I feel like I learned something today. And I feel that the best films, especially as of late, have really been just about driving home messages that aren't always subtle, but still really kind of put you in a mood of like, wow, you know what, I need to really look at myself and really kind of change things. Like I think back to Oppenheimer, you know, like that is a film with a very powerful message about, you know, today's, you know, the dangers of nuclear activity, the horrors of what it could bring about if you know, people aren't careful. And yeah, I think one of the reasons it's become such the phenomenon that it is, you know, nearly $1 billion worldwide and is about to sweep the Oscars, it's because people really resonate with, you know, the fact that Christopher Nolan, like you said, took a huge bunch of money from Universal and just made a 3-hour movie of people talking in rooms. But it's the most compelling 3 hours of people talking in rooms you've seen all year. And we're talking about things that are smart and are very well written. And I think that's what audiences want to see. And I think it's a shame that we're not getting as much of that nowadays.
I'm careful to what I say next because I don't want to sound insulting, but
That's fine.
I think audiences, Hollywood's currency is audiences and box offices. And the reason they keep making Marvel films on repeat is because it makes money. Regardless of if it loses money, it will always guarantee them a set amount of money. It will always, you know, people will always show up for these things. And so when audiences buy a ticket to something, they're saying, I want this. I want more of this. This is what I want. So you're like, you know, when Barbie made 1.4 billion and Oppenheimer made 900 million, like you're telling studios that you want this. But at the same time, you have to be so careful of what you take away and then what you push out because studios, not intelligent, but like, as in, like,
They
they're
don't really
gonna.
understand the modern consumer.
Why? They don't understand why those films are. They'll take their meaning from it and be like, they liked pink. They liked getting dressed up. They like an event. And it's like, no, like, women liked seeing a female told story led by women in a new way that had not been done before. And with Oppenheimer, I don't know. I can't talk to that. I'm not the target audience for Oppenheimer.
Fair
But
enough.
like, you know, I think that sometimes studios see responses to films and completely get the wrong end of the stick. And my biggest like poster board of this right now is people's response to the Zone of Interest. And some people deeply understanding it and people deeply not, and like both parties like enjoying it and respecting it as a good film, but like some people are taking away one thing and other people are taking away another thing, and both parties think they're right, but only one party is right. And it's concerning because we as an audience are not, we're in a scary age where we can make our own decisions about film and we can make up our own minds about film, but like sometimes you gotta just be told like this is actually what the message is, and you don't get to have an opinion on it. Like, I don't know, wasn't it like some guy made like a 3-hour long video about what he didn't like about Barbie, and it was just him like saying the wrong thing for like 3 hours. I don't know. Or I can't remember who it was, but like I think you don't get to have an opinion sometimes on film. And I think that this idea that like everyone's opinion is a genuine opinion, it's like, no, sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes you're not getting the film's message. And like you can't just be like, well, it made me feel like this. And it's like, well, that's not what the message was. So like, here's what was actually going on. I don't know if any of that made sense.
No,
But
it really
I get
did,
very
yeah.
concerned sometimes about like studios' relationships to money and seeing the wrong thing and taking away the wrong message of what audiences actually connect with.
No, you're absolutely right. I remember, just days after Barbie did gangbusters at the box office, I think Mattel were quick to announce like a Hot Wheels movie, and like they're doing like a Barney movie next. And it's just like, yeah, it's exactly your point. It's just like, no, audiences don't want film based on toys. They want like real like films that actually say something. Like you said, Greta Gerwig made a film about, the struggles of women in patriarchal societies. And it's, I mean, that's what people are interested in, not like the fact that it's Barbie. So I mean, in fact, the whole time that Barbie was out, I never once got the sense that people were going to see it just because of the brand. Every single person I went to go see is, oh, it's because Greta Gerwig made it. I feel that's what's really driven it. And it's kind of it's sad that they're, like you said, they're still not getting the point. Like all those people who just kind of like make 3 hour movies on 3 hour film videos on YouTube, just talking about, oh, everything wrong with Barbie, or here's why his zone of interest is problematic, blah blah blah. And it's just like that's I sometimes I just want to like scream at people, just like, you dumb idiots. And I have to censor it for broadcast, but you kind of get what I'm saying. Otherwise, it'd be a lot more explicit. But it's just like, you're so missing the point. This is, it's a very difficult time in Hollywood right now, because obviously we're living in an age where studio executives can write down a 70 million film just to get 30 million in tax write-off. It's insane, and it just makes people just not want to work for any of these big studios if there's not even a guarantee that your film's even going to be released. And I just think it's a real shame that, doesn't seem to be that many people out there who are willing to give creatives a real go. Like you said, when they do go big, like with Damien Chazelle in Babylon, they either go big or go home. And he went big, and most of the audiences went home, unfortunately.
And
But
it
it was, yeah. You know,
was so good.
I have a feeling that Babylon in a few years will kind of get like
Yeah,
a
it's getting the
reappraisal.
masterpiece treatment.
Oh yeah, like people will be looking at back and it's just like, oh, it might be like Heaven's Gate now, but then there'll be like a unappreciated classic. But
Oh, good.
yeah, no,
Oh, it's so good.
I hopefully Damien Chazelle will come out of director jail soon. But no, I mean, there's not much left to say. I mean, I feel like we've gone through a lot of interesting talking points today. Obviously, there's so much more to be done in terms of just getting the right representation in film, and just kind of like talking about certain subjects in total. Like films like Origin are definitely worth seeing. For those who are in the UK, it comes to UK and Irish cinemas on March the 8th through Black Bear. And I would say definitely give films like that a watch, because they deserve the support. The message deserves to be put out there, to be seen as by as many people as possible. And also support films like Billy, because they make films that have real genuine messages that not a lot of people are brave enough to say, and talk about subjects that not a lot of people are willing to even talk about. So my message to viewers is just, don't be put off by the fact, it's not, you're not going to get like a big bombastic, in go in and go out kind of audience hit. Sometimes you just need to sit down and be reminded of what the world is. And I feel that filmmakers like Ava DuVernay, like Destin Daniel Cretton, and of course Billy Melissa Rogan are absolutely, doing the right thing and really kind of putting things on the right trajectory. So in that sense, I'm really glad that you're here today just to hear me ramble about all this nonsense.
No, thank you so much for having me and for putting the audacity to have my name in the same sentence as Destin Daniel Gretton and Ava DuVernay.
Well, I feel that you're gonna go. If I Love You Guys is any indication, I think it's gonna be the sign of many great things to come. And I'm really hoping that your documentary sees the light of day through distribution as well. Hope that goes well with whichever distributor you're talking with, and hope that gets out pretty soon. I'll try and do a little message just to alert people to its presence as and when it comes out.
Thank you. I will be sure to let everybody know that is going to need all the eyes and all the support that can possibly get.
Absolutely. And once again, we are coming to the end of the episode at last. I'm sure some of you are relieved. Not re no, no. So Billy, where can people find you in case they want to hear more about your interesting thoughts?
Quite interesting thoughts. I don't know where you find those. No, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Billy Melissa underscore.
That's amazing. And of course, you can follow Film Feeder as well. You can find all the links and handles in the episode description. I'll put your links and handles in there as well.
Thank you.
So I think that brings about an end to this month's feature presentation. I have no idea what I'll be covering next month, but for now, I'm so happy that I was able to talk about social injustice in film with my very special guest, Billie Melissa Rogan. So once again, thank you so much for making the time to be on here, and I'm wishing you all the best of luck with all your projects going forward.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and thank you all very much for listening as well. As ever, I'm Jack Martin, your film chef extraordinaire, whetting your appetite for film each and every week. That's all for now. See you next time.